It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Think you know the Brooks Ghost? Think again. Introducing the all-new, better-than-ever Ghost 16. Now with nitrogen-infused cushioning for lightweight, supreme softness that feels good every step, every street, every single day. So go ahead, take your daily joyride in the all-new nitrogen-infused Ghost 16. It'll turn your everyday miles into everyday endorphins. Let's run there. Head to brooksrunning.com to learn more.
This is the Winning Plays Podcast on the CLNS Media Network, the leading online provider for the NBA's winningest franchise.
Welcome in to the final edition of the Winning Plays Podcast. As you know it, my name is Brian Robb, and this is far from a bittersweet farewell for this podcast, as we have some extremely big news to announce. The Celtics have been obviously making a ton of blockbuster moves heading into this season, and figured it was our turn to up our game in the podcasting world. So this is going to be the last edition of the Winning Plays Podcast. But that's actually a good thing for you listeners out there, because moving forward, I'm going to be joining forces with Jay King of The Athletic, as well as Sam Packard, on their podcast, Still Podable, as we all team up together, combine forces to create a daily Celtics podcast. Now, what exactly does this mean for you? You will still be able to get this podcast in a Still Podable form every Monday in this very feed, which will be named Still Podable going forward, RIP Winning Plays. The more important news is that three of us will be producing a Celtics podcast every single weekday going forward under the Still Podable Patreon. So if you sign up under the Still Podable Patreon, you can see the link in the description of this pod. You will be able to get a Celtics theme podcast every weekday from the three of us for as little as $5 a month. There's three different pricing tiers involved at $5, $10, and $25 a month. That will get you access to daily podcasts from the three of us, along with a number of other cool features like a group chat involving other subscribers and us, and the ability to participate in the podcast themselves by asking us questions. Obviously, there'll be no ads in the podcast on the Patreon as well. So we'll have a full breakdown on the site itself. You can check out that description here in the link for this podcast episode. But to be honest, guys, I'm just really excited about this. I'm really excited to be joining forces with JMJM, who have been podcasting together about the scenes for years and are great institutions on the beat, along with obviously Jay's great writing at The Athletic. And so the question is for you, like, what are you getting with this new setup from the three of us? You're getting, again, coverage of what you want from us on a day-to-day basis about the seas, no ads, timely reaction to the big games, trades, events, any breaking news. There's going to be a combination of us reacting to it quickly on the hill for all of our subscribers. So it's something you want to be a part of. We're also really focused on building a community on the Patreon, so you can chat with other people on it before, after games. And we'll obviously be checking in there as well. And we'll be taking ideas, questions, topics from everyone on there as well. So we really want it to be a collaborative effort as we break down everything about this team. We'll obviously be diving into trade stuff, free agency stuff, draft stuff, because as it comes at any points of the year, this will be a year-round endeavor that will keep you posted on a team that everyone's excited about. And the other good news is regular Winning Plays contributors in the past, such as Chris Forsberg, Michael Pina, Ryan Bernardoni, Sweetie Tirada, they're also going to appear periodically on the new show as guests from time to time. And I want to give all those guys a special shout out for being a part of the Winning Plays pod in recent years here, and specifically, obviously, co-founders Mike Pina of The Ringer and Rich Levine. Love everyone who's been a part of it. Really enjoy making shows of those guys, and will still be a part of the show going forward in guest form from time to time. But it's going to be me, it's going to be Jay, it's going to be Sam on the Still Podable podcast. We're going to be bringing you fresh content every day in what could be a really special season for the Seas. So that's my spiel. Without further ado, here's our first show together. Again, thanks for listening. Thanks for everyone for checking this out, and really hope to see you listening to us on this one and going forward as part of the Patreon.
You
are the kids, the gods, and the legends. I am Sam Jam Packard. He is El Nino J. King from The Athletic. And for the first time ever, from MassLive.com, Brian B-Rob Rob is joining us here. And together, we are Still Potable! That's right, folks. B-Rob's joining the Still Potable family. Still Potable is getting bigger. It's getting better. And we're creating a podcast empire. And I'm thrilled about it. This is exciting stuff. Jay, take it away. I'm at a loss for words just because I'm amped up.
This is an awesome announcement. And we've known about this for like, what, a week, 2 weeks now? And I've just been itching to tell everyone because I really think it's a huge shakeup. I think it's going to be not just a better show, but now we're going to be a more consistent show. We're going to do daily shows Monday through Friday. We're going to still have the tiers that we've had in the Patreon page, but we're also going to add one free show that people can listen to without being a subscriber, or you can get it without ads if you are a subscriber. Then we're going to have the two other tiers, one with two shows a week, the other with the other four shows a week. And you can look at our Patreon page for kind of the breakdown of all that stuff. But I just think this is awesome. And B-Rob is just kind of the perfect fit where he doesn't take himself or this whole thing too seriously. But he's also an extremely talented Celtics analyst who knows a lot about the game. And so to add him is something that really, like, I just think it's a perfect fit.
I cannot echo that anymore, gentlemen. I mean, this is like, you know, we've talked about this for a week or two now. And for a while I've been thinking about, you know, it'd be great to do something daily on the podcast front. And when the opportunity opened up to do it with you two fine gentlemen, that was something I was head over heels for. And I think we are going to team up and create the best analysis, the best entertaining Celtics Daily Pod out there for all our subscribers. And, you know, the Celtics made some big moves this offseason, and damn it, it was our turn. And here we are.
A new big three.
Who gives a shit about Kristaps Porzingis and Drew Holiday? We had a B-Rob, the biggest acquisition around the Celtics this offseason. And he's coming just in time for the regular season. And I really love, like, it's better to have a show that's every day. It's fresher content. It's better content. It's more in-depth content. And adding a third person just allows us to do that. And the fact that it's B-Rob and the fact that he has as much institutional knowledge as he does about the Celtics, the fact that he puts in all the work about the Celtics, the fact that, like, we can just add such an awesome perspective to the show. Like, I'm so pumped. And again, like, I've stressed this to the listeners a lot, all the subscribers, and now the people on the free show can hear it too. But we don't take it lightly at all that you guys are paying money to listen to us speak about the Celtics. And we're just going to use that all as an investment to just get bigger, get better, and do more shows, do better shows, and just connect to everyone and hopefully make this the best place to chat about the Celtics, to listen about the Celtics, to kind of feel like you're with your friends every single day, Monday through Friday. And that's the vision here. And this is just a huge step toward solidifying us as I think we've always had the best Celtics podcast, but doing it every day and adding B-Rob, who's just fucking awesome, is like, I'm head over heels about it. I'm so excited. B-Rob, just a little like behind the scenes. So B-Rob called me. Is it okay if I share like the backstory here, B-Rob?
Sure, of course.
Yeah, so B-Rob called me and was like, I have an idea. I didn't really know where he was going to go with it. And I don't think he knew how I would react to his pitch of merging podcasts and adding him to Still Potable. And immediately I was like, oh, fuck yeah. like this is amazing. I'm going to call Packard. I'm sure he's going to be on board too. I called Packard and Packard was like, hell yeah. There were no reservations at all. And
well, I'm just like, excited to talk to someone about the Celtics other than you, Jay. And so it's going to be nice to like just kind of change up that dynamic, have different kind of, I think that's a good thing about the show is that I think on the free shows on Mondays, we're going to all three of us are going to be in there, but it's just going to be a way for us to have kind of different discussions. And so keep it fresh. And sometimes it'll be B Rob and I, sometimes it'll be Jay and I, sometimes it'll be just Jay and B Rob. But I think it's a way to kind of have constantly does, you know, sometimes those discussions get repetitive, but I think as long as they're changing up perspectives, I'm excited to kind of just grow and kind of figure out what all those new dynamics are. So it's going to be pretty awesome. If you want the free show, take it on Monday, but you're going to want to be listening in for the rest of the week. So sign up, become a kid, get that Tuesday and Thursday show, sign up to be a god, and you can get every single show in the week, or you can sign up, be a legend. You could be watching us live for every single time we post on StreamYard. You could join us in the studio. You could join the discussion. I think it's just going to be a really fun community. And especially once the season gets started, be super interactive on the chat, super responsive to mailbags, questions and things like that. And so I'm just really looking forward to the season getting started. The thing is, like, I'm excited to podcast with both of you guys, but the fact that the Celtics are going to be really fucking good makes it also like a lot more exciting. And like the preseason that they just had, and just how much it looks like the impact that Kristaps and Jrue Holiday are going to make on this team, I think only further adds that excitement. Brian, we haven't like got a chance to, talk to you here on the podcast about kind of like what your impressions were from the Celtics offseason, I guess, from their preseason, and what am I justified in having these ridiculously high expectations for this team heading into the regular season that starts on Wednesday?
I mean, I don't like this is a terrible offseason for the Packers. I don't know what you're talking about. This is just like they're really trying to patch things together. No, this is to your point. This team is, I think it's going to be a wagon, health permitting, obviously, but all summer long, there's big questions in terms of what this team would look like, with Marcus Smart out the door. And with the Porzingis fit made a lot of sense, but also opened up some vulnerable spots in other parts of the roster. And to be able to bring in Jrue Holiday for that to answer, we don't know if it's going to answer all those questions, but a hell heck of a lot based on what we're seeing so far through 2 weeks of meaningless
preseason. You can say hell, it's okay.
I mean,
you can
I got used to swearing behind a lawyer.
Shit. You can say whatever
damn.
You
want.
It's no. Cool.
But no, it's a lot of
second swear word was damn
gosh darn fucking A, this is brutal. No, I mean I have to work my way in here, guys. To the still potable vernacular. But no, it is a situation where I think you look where they are, and you especially look around other teams around at East J in terms of what they have to go up against, and it looks like they're in as good of a situation as you want right now heading into the start of the season, given the drama going on elsewhere.
All right, let's take a break to hear from our sponsor, FanDuel. Snap into the action this NFL season with FanDuel, America's number one sports book. Right now, new customers get $200 in bonus bets guaranteed when you place a $5 bet. That's $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. If you've been thinking about joining FanDuel, there's no better time to get in on the action. The app is easy to use. There's a wide range of betting options, including spreads, player props, over-unders, and much more. So visit FanDuel.com/Boston and kick off the NFL season. FanDuel, the official partner of the NFL. 21 plus and present in Massachusetts. Hope is here. First online, real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com, gambling helpline ma.org, or call 1-800-327-5050 for 24/7 support. Play smarts from the start, gamesensema.com, or call 1-800-GAM-1234.
Yeah, and I thought they and the Bucks did the most over the offseason to improve. And I thought especially after the Bucks got Damian Lillard and then the Celtics kept adding, while like the other teams just didn't do too much. Cleveland was probably the other quasi-contender that helped itself the most, but they didn't get out of the first round last year. They had a long, long way to go among the contenders. Like Philly still doesn't know whether James Harden will play for them this year, which seems like an issue. And now the whole Bucks thing is just weird. Just a weird situation over there. First of all, Middleton like didn't start training camp. Bad sign after he went away for the offseason. Like to come back and you just can't practice immediately. I know you want to ramp a guy up. I know you want to be safe with guys, but that's just not a great sign. And then Terry Stotts just leaves. The top assistant coach just leaves like a week before the season. And
do we know what happened there? I just saw that he was leaving, and I thought I saw some rumors of like an altercation, but like, was there any follow-up for like why that left?
Shams Charania reported and Eric Name reported that there was like a thing at practice where Adrian Griffin called for a coaches meeting after a huddle, and instead Terry Stotts like went and was talking to some of the players and like kind of giving them advice, and Adrian Griffin like called over to like summon him to come, and then Stotts was like, ah, can I get a few moments here? And it happened in front of everybody, and it was just a sign of the weird dynamic with Terry Stotts, who not only was a very good head coach, but also was Damian Lillard's head coach for a long time. So you can see why that would be a very weird dynamic, but it's not the best start to the Adrian Griffin era in Milwaukee.
And then you throw in the fact that they have literally no one to defend on the perimeter. Outside of who, like,
don't sleep on Marjan Beauchamp.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Beauchamp. But can we think of like, I'm trying to think of like, just not to get off on the Bucks too much here, but like Stott, that president of when assistant coach like feuds, someone something like that happened before. But I'm thinking like, oh yeah, like Lawrence Frank, yeah, like had that situation.
We have to
bring Scal on to talk about this.
Yeah. Scal's got some experience in this field.
Scal was secretly recording his coach. I don't know if Terry Stotts had broken any wiretap laws.
It doesn't happen very often, for sure. And the fact that happened like so close to
opening night,
the start of the season, and then it's just like Adrian Griffin is a first-time head coach, and I have no idea whether he's going to be good in that. He has a good reputation as an assistant from his time in Toronto and elsewhere. Like, who knows whether he'll be good, but it's not the greatest sign that his top assistant has already left, because one of the biggest jobs as a head coach is to just deal with everybody, just put out fires left and right, connect with people, like just handle every issue that happens in an organization. And for that to become such a divisive thing right away, not the greatest. I don't want to spend too much time on Milwaukee's misgivings, because like that seems
they could just come out and, of them. They could just come out and win 20 games like at the start of the season.
End, adding Damian Lillard next to Giannis, they're probably going to be awesome, and maybe this is all just stuff that doesn't end up mattering in the long run. But as far as like before the season starts stuff, they've just had it's been a tough little run for them.
And like we've talked about just how difficult it was for Mazzulla to come in, and it's obviously not the same circumstance, but it's like first year coach, you don't like, you're trying to set up your system, you're trying to like put everything in place. Obviously something like this has a kind of destabilizing effect. First year head coaches rarely win. Nick Nurse is the only one I can really think of, but that was like major Kawhi. Ime did well, but like it took a while. That first like 4 months of Ime's first season was really up and down and kind of tumultuous. And it wasn't until kind of they just developed that crazy defense. B-Rob, we've talked about kind of what we've seen from Joe Mazzulla heading into year two and how it just like feels remarkably different just from like his press conferences alone. Like you can just sense a comfort level that he was that like, instead of just outward hostility towards the media, he actually like, you know, answers questions, you know, even might throw in a joke there. But like you are someone like Jay, who's there every day, asking him questions. And so I'm guess curious, like your perspective on the kind of the second year Joe Mazzulla, because we can talk about the lineup changing, but like just being around the team a little bit, it feels like his kind of shift in mindset or being more comfortable has been like a big noticeable change so far.
Yeah, there's honestly, that probably is the biggest, not the biggest notable reason, but the most noticeable one with this team, is just in terms of, you know, how comfortable he feels talking to us. And I'm sure that goes for the case in the locker room as well, with the players, where last year at this point, you're not walking on eggshells, but you're the interim coach for a team that has title aspirations. So you're certainly not going to rock the boat. He lost that tag midway through the year, but I think he was still, you know, pretty set in his ways all year long. And the team, I think, made a lot of changes this offseason. I think some of those changes will maybe potentially help Joe out in terms of, you know, being able to stretch his wings a little bit more. And obviously, I think the lineup decisions are going to be a lot simpler for me this year. But for me, I'm kind of withholding judgment here until we see him talking. We hear him talk so far in preseason, but I want to see the walk in the games. Since I think last season, especially in the playoffs, there were some pretty tough situations for him that were, I think, were pretty badly mismanaged at points, whether it was in the game stuff or some lineup stuff. You guys and I talked about Derek White stuff all year long. Some of that stuff will take care of itself, but I'm very eager to see what type of changes he makes in year two, since that I think could potentially be a way for this team to go from very good to, you know, phenomenal in the regular season, at least.
Yeah. And he's saying all the right things. What he stressed recently is like the need to develop other ways to win besides just beating people with three pointers. And I wrote a story about this tonight for The Athletic. And while looking back at the stats, it was crazy how unable they were to win when they didn't shoot the ball very well. They were 31-1 when they shot at least 40% from three, and like basically 500 when they didn't. In the playoffs, they were 2-8 when they shot less than 39% from three. Wow. Which is like, that's a high number.
That's high.
They only won one of like, I think it was seven games when they shot worse than 35% from three in the playoffs. And the one was Derek White's fucking tip in at the buzzer, which was very fortunate. So they didn't force turnovers at all. They hardly ever offensive rebounded. Robert Williams was like basically their only chance to grab an offensive rebound last year. And that shouldn't have been the case. Like, they did not have to be a bad turnover forcing team. They had Marcus Smart. They had Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, Derek White, Robert Williams when he played, even though he only played 35 games. That should have been a super disruptive team. And the year before, they finished 11th in forcing turnovers, which isn't great, but it's at least pretty good. And they plummeted almost to the bottom of the league last year. And I think a lot of it was the way that Joe coached the defense. Like, it was more conservative style. It was, he said that he didn't emphasize defense enough. He wasn't consistent enough with the messaging to the players on that. And you can see that it's different now. And so that's what should give Celtics fans confidence, is like, he's analyzed every single thing he did. He has analyzed every single thing the team did. He has realized that playoff basketball is different than regular season basketball. He understands now that sometimes you can throw his beloved math out the window and you just need to find different ways to win. And the Celtics didn't have that last year. So I think it's super promising that like he has placed such an emphasis on kind of not winning ugly all the time, but being able to win ugly when they need to. And like, again, they should be a very good defensive team. They should be a very disruptive defensive team with Drew Holiday, with Derek White, Tatum, Brown. Like, they should be able to get a lot of steals, get out in transition, be a really dangerous team in that regard. They were not good at any of that stuff last year. And it's on Joe to change the strategies, to change the focuses. And I think he started to do that. So I would like, I came into this season wanting to see exactly what he'd changed. And it's a lot. Like, he really reviewed everything. And I think they're going to really benefit from having him in year two now and knowing exactly what he wants to do and being more like confident and sure of himself and just with like more wisdom about how to navigate everything.
What do you think? What do you guys think the adjustment is on the defensive end to be more aggressive, to take like to try and generate more turnovers? I think like obviously just having the players that they do have in Jrue Holiday and Derek White, that's like probably two of the best perimeter defenders in the league. Maybe put Alex Caruso in there as well, but like obviously just having that talent, but like scheme wise, they're not going to, it doesn't feel like they're necessarily going to be a switch everything team with Kristaps in there. So what are they doing to kind of be more aggressive and just try to, I guess, generate more turnovers and get out in transition?
To me, it's probably just two things just off the top of my head. One, if you have Jason Tatum talking about wanting to make all defensive team, that's probably going to help. Like just from a straight effort standpoint for him. Not that he's been a good to great defender in the past, but if he's committed to that every night here, that helps there. And two, I think honestly, like we'll go for offensive too, to what Jay just talked about. Like, I think just getting a little more unpredictable. Like they had a conservative scheme and they didn't really stray from it too much over the course of the year. And I think that led to problems at points in the playoffs. If they throw some wrinkles in here and there based on their personnel, I think that can go a long way in terms of certainly creating the turnovers you want and just, you know, keeping offenses guessing a little more, possession to possession.
Yeah. And I think they're so smart. Like defensively, they just have a lot of really smart defenders who are capable of doing all that stuff on the fly. And I can remember like, it was a time last year toward the beginning of the year when the Celtics defense was not good. Like the numbers very early were not good. And they ended up finishing second, which is obviously really good. But still never reached the point where they like just totally shut people down or were able to keep people off guard. And I remember Joe Mazzulla just saying like, yeah, like we're forcing shots from like the right areas and our opposing effective field goal percentage or like effective field goal percentage was really good. And it's like, so the structure was there. And I think what he failed to realize is that the structure can be there, but at the end of the day, it's like, you have to be able to make the best players uncomfortable. And that's where the Celtics struggled last, like Atlanta Hawks series. Trae Young was comfortable most of that series. And that was in the playoffs when everybody was locked in, when everybody was, he felt comfortable. James Harden, you know, game one of the second round series, they let him feel comfortable the whole game. And he ended up with 40 points even without Joel Embiid. And it's like, yes, you can force guys into the shots you want, but at the end of the day against the very best players, that shit makes a difference that you are not showing them new stuff, that you are not being super aggressive attacking them, that you are not, you know, sending like hard traps, that you were not like just doing stuff on the fly. And I don't think they ever reached that level last year. They were really good in the regular season. They had great numbers. But like they never had that switch or not a switch. Cause the year before it wasn't a switch. Like they never reached that level where they were just going to take you out of what you wanted to do. And to me, that was the biggest difference. And that's like, that should be the vision this year to, yes, force the types of shots you want. And yes, like try to be a great defense. But at the end of the day, you have to take away someone's comfort level. And you have to be able to do that against the best players in the world. And you can't just like funnel them to a certain place of on the floor and let them shoot like a certain percentage shot, because at the end of the day, against the best players, you just need to be better than that.
Okay. Caleb Martin was in the comfiest chair ever for that entire series.
I was going to say, you can play the math and you can like force certain guys to take shots, but then sometimes Caleb Martin, Max Strus, and Gabe Vincent are going to shoot 55% from three for an entire series, and like you're going to need to do something differently. I think the offensive end, it feels like there's not as like – it's not like they're going to stop shooting threes. Like they're still going to shoot like 60 threes a game. Like – And so I think it's going to be interesting to see what happens when those are not falling, but I still think, like, especially the spacing with the Kristaps at the five lineup, like, they are going to be launching. They are, like, going to be, I would say, multiple games over 23s made. And so I think they're going to have, like, different wrinkles, and Kristaps will be able to punish switches. And, you know, Jason Tatum, everyone's talking about how he put on 12 pounds of muscle in the offseason. He's going to be playing.
Especially Jam Packer.
that was the joke, Jay. Thank you. He's going to play some bully ball. But, like, what? Like, I don't think the offense, like, philosophy is necessarily going to change. Like, Mazzulla Ball is launching as many threes as possible. And I think they brought in some players who are going to help facilitate that. But I don't think we're going to see, like, drastically different looks just on the offensive end. It's just going to be more of the same, basically.
So this was an interesting thing that happened after not practice today, but practice Friday. So Joe finished his scrum interview and then just basically stood there for like 5 minutes explaining why that game was an example of what he wants to be in the shot margins. And basically he said that he wants to shoot all the same threes they did last year. Where he wants more twos is in transition after forced turnovers and on putback attempts after offensive rebounds. And he said basically, like, if they can add those to their shot profile, then that's going to be what makes a difference. And that's going to be what makes them less reliant on the three, not necessarily passing up threes and like trying to over dribble, because that actually usually goes poorly in the NBA. And the Celtics have been an example of that sometimes, even in recent years when they've launched a lot of threes. But I thought that was really interesting, because last year he went on and on about threes, got to shoot threes, yada, yada, yada. And modern math, like, yes, you do. Three greater than two, yada, yada, yada. But, like, it's interesting to see that he wants to add those other twos and not necessarily, like, half-court twos or twos at the expense of open threes. Like, just add, like, this whole different category that they really weren't able to tap into last year. So I thought that that was interesting from Mazzulla.
Yeah, that, and to add to that, they just added, they're a better shooting team, period. Like, you, for as much as they may miss Marcus Smart, like, teams would be begging for him to take those threes a lot of the time. And he was good at, like, not firing away as much as years past, but that was still a problem for spacing, especially in the playoff now. So now you have Jrue Holiday in that role. You have what, like, who's a non-shooter who's going to be in the rotation right now? Like, Luke Kornet? Like, that's pretty much it. Like,
and if Horford comes off the bench, Kornet will play minimal.
Right. He'll play maybe five. He's going to play back to backs, and that's going to be it. So, like, if you and then you have better guys like Porzingis to get the twos that you were just talking about, Jay, you have better guys to do that now, where whether it's Porzingis versus mismatches, whether it's, you know, you have better shooters around Tatum and Brown. So their driving lane should be better in theory once things get going here. So, like, offensively, we've seen them scratching the surface of it now, but it's like, this is going to be nightmares for defenses if this team can stay healthy and the ball moves, which is still, I think, going to be an open question too in terms of the guys they have on the floor, how well that, you know, the cohesiveness gets early. But I don't know, like, Jam, do you think, like, that's there already, or do you feel like that's, like, going to be a work in progress more?
Just from the preseason, it's just looked so easy for them on offense that we haven't seen them in like a high leverage situation. So it's like,
against any good players.
Yeah, sure. They played complete trash this preseason, like one first unit.
Yes, absolutely. And so we have yet to see them face any sort of adversity. We've yet to see them in a close game where, like, things slow down and they, like, need a bucket and how it's working. But just the amount of attention that Kristaps kind of generates in kind of when he sets a screen and rolls or kind of pops, I think it just makes kind of the reads much easier. But I do think it's going to be interesting to be like, okay, what's their five, whatever is defined as a close game. Like, what is their go-to offense? Is it just putting the ball in Tatum's hands and kind of running a Kristaps high screen and roll with him? Or are you going to kind of let Derek White or Jrue Holiday kind of be more traditional point guards? I think there's, like, so many different options. But I'm very curious because, like, it seems like they've played with, like, a lot of flow of the offense. Obviously, it was in preseason. Obviously, it was against not very good opponents. what happens when they play a good team and like things kind of slow down, like the stuff they're trying to do, the transitions is not working for them. They're not generating turnovers, or they're not getting the offensive rebounds. What's their kind of default kind of like clutch offense? And this point, I just have no idea what that is. I'm assuming it's, you put the ball in Jason Tatum's hands and try to make a play, but I'm just kind of curious, like who's going to be the main playmaker facilitator? Cause it felt like last year when they needed something, it was kind of Marcus Smart, Jason Tatum, two-man game. And they really developed a chemistry where either one screen for each other, or they kind of knew where they'd want to be. And that was the kind of like break in need of emergency kind of offense. I don't know what that offense is now, but we have no idea at this point. Like I think they just have a much more talented kind of, as you mentioned, shooting roster. So maybe they won't have to worry about that as much.
Yeah, there's a lot. Obviously, we still haven't learned about this team. Yeah, that's crunch time offense has to be the biggest, because 2022, they lost the finals because their crunch time offense wasn't good enough. 2023, they lost to the Heat because their offense in huge moments wasn't good enough. So how does the new mix work in those last 5 minutes? How does Porzingis unlock? Does he unlock things? How does he unlock things? Even from his, like from an individual perspective with him, how does he handle like playoff competition? He hasn't been in the playoffs since Dallas, I think.
And he was not good, if I remember correctly, in the Dallas, like in the playoffs.
Yeah. So he's had very minimal playoff experience. And so there's just a lot to be answered there. I do think that when you watch Porzingis, and it's just kind of like, oh, wow, that dude's going to be tough for other teams to stop. And that dude with Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum and Drew Holiday and Derek White is going to be a lot for teams to handle. But like, again, what happens when teams are mucking things up? Is he going to be able to still score in the post like he did last year in Washington? You know, in the conference finals when Giannis is guarding him or Brooke Lopez is guarding him in the post. I don't know. That's not clear yet, but I just think it should be an easy, like basketball wise, the skill sets just mesh together so well. And Porzingis and just at the level of shooting, there's always something that stood out to me. I think it was JJ Redick who said it, but I could be wrong. And he basically said, when there's more shooting on the court, everyone else gets open shots. And it's not intuitive, because you'd think like if there's a ton of shooting on the court, the other team will be locked into stopping the shooters. But really, you just like get so overeager to stop shooters that you then give up like extra passes to the other guy, or you're not guarding a screen well and somebody just pops wide open. And so I think the Celtics have a chance for that, where they just have so many really, really good shooters who can also do other things that it's going to be easy for them a lot of nights offensively.
Yeah. Like the Tatum and the crunch time offense woes for this team, I mean, they go back even beyond the last 2 years. Like, even go back to the bubble of the Heat. Like, there is just Tatum and Brown, for all that they've done, they've really struggled a lot in those moments. And they've, you know, Tatum has hit big, they both hit big shots, but by and large, it hasn't been great when they needed it the most. And so you wonder how much of that was, you know, last year in particular, like, okay, like coaching wise, there's not calling timeouts a lot in those situations, letting them play, and that just wasn't leading to results. But I think they, the best way to solve that, to your point, Jay, is like, add more shooting around them. I think that creates more space, and that should create more opportunities, whether it's for Tatum and Porzingis in the pick and roll, or whether it's for swinging it to White in the corner, who makes the extra drive and kick to Jaylen Brown on the opposite side. Like those type of plays, we didn't see much of that at all last season in those big moments. I feel like that is potentially like the final piece of the puzzle here of like, okay, like they have the pieces there to put together that type of unpredictable offense in those spots. And it's whether or not they actually like, you know, hold to it.
Who's the worst shooter in their top eight?
In like on paper, or just like in those, in terms of trusting in those moments, you feel like
No, just like overall, including like shot talent. Because like it's one thing to shoot 45% or whatever Horford did, but it's another to be Sam Hauser and coming around a million screens and still shooting 42% or whatever he was.
Yeah, I don't probably Horford, I would think, because of like, I know his percentages have been great in the last couple of races, but in terms of like, if you give, he probably gets the most wide open looks out of anyone in that group. Maybe Derek White will too. I know Drew Holiday struggled in threes and places, so I feel like
in the playoffs only. Yeah, yeah, it's probably either Holiday or White,
and right? And it's like nuts.
Shooter in your top eight,
it's pretty good.
That's dangerous. Like it's kind of wild, especially when they on the nights when they typically or on the nights when they primarily play the top eight, they are gonna have so much shooting.
All right, who's a better pick to bet on right now for sixth man of the year, Al Horford or Peyton Pritchard?
Neither of them.
Yeah. Peyton Pritchard's going to play more games.
I ask you an either-or question. If you had to bet on...
And I'm saying they're both bad bets. You fade them both.
Well, who are you picking for sixth man of the year, then?
Somebody who scores a lot of points. It's always somebody who scores a lot of points. That award is not that does not typically go to the best player who comes off the bench. It goes to the biggest scorer who comes off the bench. So I don't know who that will be, but maybe Quickly. He was close last year.
Probably makes sense.
Is Brogdon still going to come off the bench in Portland? I don't know. Maybe he makes it two in a row.
He's going to play 10 games and then get three.
So you mentioned Horford's not going to be playing back to back.
What about Chris Paul? Ooh, maybe Chris Paul.
That could be.
I thought he's going to start too.
Yeah, I don't know if he's going to start.
Back to the Celtics. Horford's going to come off the bench, or not playing back to backs. I think they're like, obviously Kristaps has injury history, and I feel like they're probably not going to try to. I have no idea how they're going to treat him in back to backs, but like the big rotation, I think, is like a question mark because one, Al Horford's just age, Kristaps' injury history, but then you also just know, I don't know how many back to backs they have this season, but you're just going to have a bunch of games where you're not going to have both of them. Do you see that like being an issue for them of just like not having that much front court depth? And how do you think the roster is prepared to kind of deal with that? Just knowing that there's just going to be some games where you're not going to have both of your bigs in Kristaps and Horford. And then because behind that, there's just not that much kind of talent there. As much as I enjoy Luke Kornet and Amari's Keta.
How dare you? There's no question. I don't think this is going to be an ongoing saga. I think they're going to add someone else to this team in the front court that maybe they trust a little bit more than those guys. And they don't have hot take. They have this $6 million TPE from Grant Williams. That doesn't get, there's not a whole lot of guys that fit into that, but there's a couple that are like intriguing and probably a bunch of them aren't available now, but that situation in a couple months down the road, we'll get into that when the time comes. But I just think with this team, with the urgency of this team right now, you have to build in an insurance plan. And Luke Kornet is great for the regular season. He's an innings eater guy. But if one of those guys goes down the playoffs and, O'Shea Brissett isn't cutting it in those, stretch four, stretch 5 minutes, then this is an area to kind of, I think, monitor all year long in terms of who's out there and who could be a good, emergency piece in that front.
Yeah. And some of it depends on whether Brissett or Stevens kind of solidifies themselves as someone worthy of minutes and capable of playing, not just regular season minutes, but playoff minutes. And it's probably a long way for either of those guys to get to that point. They both shot the ball terribly during preseason, which will be one of the limiting factors for them. If they can't shoot, then it's going to be really tough to have them on the court in the playoffs. Lamar Stevens, he saw that last year in Cleveland where he started a bunch of games and then come playoff time was just not really part of their plans. So I think if one of those guys solidifies themselves, then you can play smaller a little bit if you do have a front court injury. But I'm with B-Rob on this one. Like, that's something to watch. They're clearly all in to win a title right now. And typically, like, there are bigs to get who can make a difference. And we saw them go out and get Daniel Tice a couple years ago. It wasn't
put it on the board.
Yeah, it wasn't the sexiest acquisition ever, but
I wouldn't go that far.
But then Robert Williams went down, and it was super important to have a reliable backup big in Daniel Tice. So, yeah, I unless Kedda like takes control of those minutes, unless Cornette is really good, then that's definitely something that they might do at the deadline. But then again, last year they went and got Mike Muscala,
right.
And that was their, you know, front court depth piece guy, and he did nothing for them. He had like two good games when he first got to Boston, and then did nothing for them. So it's harder to find a serviceable big than I just gave credit for.
Well, we didn't even talk about Nathan Knight here, guys. So the disrespect on him.
Yeah, how do we get 40 minutes without discussing the second most famous alumni of Nottingham High School in the Celtics sphere? He went to Adam Himmel's Box High School.
Oh, you said that initially, like all of us should have known. Also, who the first famous.
I don't know whether Sherrod went to that same high school, but I think he did. I think they all went to Nottingham High School.
So you have the rankings of Himmelsbach, Knight, then Sherrod in terms
no,
of
that was just that was just a stupid joke. It's clearly NBA player number one or two-way player number one, and then the media guys are lumped together far below that.
Nice save. Well done.
Nathan Knight did have one hell of a game against the Celtics a few years back.
Is that Brad's entire strategy? Just anyone who has a good game against the Celtics, we'll bring him in and see if we kick the tires on him?
Yeah, we have to make a list. We have to go back the last couple years now with him coaching and figure out what's who else.
Either that or guys who have played for him.
Yeah.
Daniel Tice, I don't think he ever really had a good game against the Celtics, but he had plenty of good games for him. Al Horford, same thing. And then he, like, Brissett killed them. Nathan Knight, that was one of the worst performances the Celtics have had in a long time, the Nathan Knight game.
It was Did Monroe play in that game, too?
It was Greg him Monroe. And Greg Monroe just cooking them when they had most of their guys available. I want to say it was during the weird COVID year.
It was.
But I don't really remember. But Nathan Knight and Greg Monroe just cooking them was a low. That was a low. That was Ime's year, right?
During the 20 and 20 start to Ime. Like,
before things started to click for the Ime Celtics, they were just getting toasted by Greg Monroe.
And now
and new two-way player Nathan Knight. So we talked a lot
he
about.
He trucked Corrales at practice today.
Take a step back. This. Let's tell the whole story.
Trucked Corrales at practice. So we're sitting there in the scrum interviewing Joe Mazzulla, and all of a sudden, Corrales just comes crashing through and almost tackles Mazzulla inadvertently. And I don't know exactly what happened on the court because I wasn't watching it, but somehow Nathan Knight collided with Corrales, who was like 7-8 feet off the court, and it was magical. I wish Corrales had fallen into Joe. I wish he had fallen into a camera. I wish it had been more of a aftermath, more damage done, but it was still magical.
It was like a one-on-one game on the court, and unless I didn't hear it, the funniest part is like Corrales was like, oh my God, like he took a shot. I mean, Nathan Knight is 6'9". Like that's a lot. He was going full steam ahead. That's a lot of dude coming in there. And then he just like left and like nothing happened. Like Corrales was like, oh my God. And then Nathan Knight just turned around back to the court.
I don't think there was any like stopping to apologize. It wasn't like checking to see what happened. It was like he went right back into the game.
And Corrales is a big dude. Like, to send him flying into a scrum is kind of wild. So
I would have been dead. I would have been dead if that was me in Corrales' spot. I'm probably half his size.
It was probably fortunate that it wasn't anybody else, because there are a lot of people who would have just gotten absolutely trucked. But Corrales, what is he, like 6'5"?
Yeah, he played hoops. Like, yeah, he's
200. 200. I'm not going to guess his weight. could come off a little disrespectful.
The check of sources.
But he's a big dude. And he didn't go down. He stumbled. He staggered. He almost ran over like 5 or 6 people, but he stayed on his feet. Good for him.
Shouts to him. All right. We've talked a lot about this Celtics team, and like, obviously they have championship expectations. I think we've talked about a lot of things, like whether or not Kristaps can perform in the playoffs, what their clutch offense is going to be with respect to the playoffs. We might be getting a little bit ahead of ourselves, because there are, do have 82 games to play before they even start that. And to borrow a Bradism, and I think Joe would approve, because it feels like Joe is very much a Kaizen disciple of Brad. A memory that always sticks out to me is when they lost that series to Milwaukee. Brad just went on and on about how Milwaukee has championship habits and the Celtics didn't have championship habits. That's basically just like subtweeting Kyrie for not really being locked in. But the idea of just like building those habits, and like that is kind of like part of what the point of the regular season is to like kind of like work on these things and develop cohesion and trust among the players. And so I'm curious from you guys, just like as beat reporters, you guys have been doing this professionally for way longer than I have. What are you looking for from this team in the first couple of games of the season to kind of like see signs of either they're like on their way to building championship habits, or they're like doing something right? What are you guys like looking for in these first games that are now actually like meaningful against the Knicks and the Heat?
I would say on that front, you look at the crunch time stuff that we already talked about. First of all, I mean, that's the ball movement stuff is you see over the course of the game, but that to me is like, this is where this team, if you want to be a championship team, you have to be able to produce in those moments. And this team hasn't shown they can do that when it matters most for going on 3-4 years now with the top guys in place. And then on top of that is just the Joe Mazzulla's adaptability in the game itself. Like we're seeing, I think he's saying the right things now. He clearly has, you know, far better foothold in terms of his cover level and, you know, self-reflecting what he was doing last year and changes he wants to make. But to be able to do that in real time is tough, and to be able to pull the right strings is tough. And that's something that, you know, great coaches in this league do. And Brad Stevens was, I think, one of the best at that when he was here. And now that Joe in year two, you talk to anyone around this organization, they're as high on him as ever. And so now he kind of gets to show that off and has a pretty strong supporting cast of coaches around him to help him do that.
The things I'm looking at aren't necessarily, I mean, they'll show up in games and stuff like that, but I think it's all the other stuff. And it starts like the way that players have reacted to Joe's changes so far, and just how excited they seem to be about just like the small culture changes that he's brought on. That's the stuff that matters to me. Because last year, like, they were 21-5. They won 57 games. They never reached a point where it was like, this team is operating at such a high level. The year before, they played much better basketball. And now, like last year, the perfect example was like when they lost to Orlando, then came back and lost to Orlando again in a back-to-back. And then I think they lost like 2 more games. And it's like, why don't you guys just snap out of it? Why does it take so long for you guys to get back on the same page? Like, why do you keep having these ruts? Why don't you have more of a, like, why aren't you on more of a mission? And everyone said last year, we want to get back to the finals, this and that. They never really carried themselves with the consistency that it takes to be an elite team. They were very good, maybe great, but they never reached that elite status. And to me, like, the consistency piece is what changes. Like, are you going to be like the 08 Celtics where they wanted to kill you every single night? They wanted to stop you every single possession. And those are the teams that, like, that's the mentality that this team needs to get. And they never really had that last year. And then the other piece, like you said, is just the offense, like late game offense. Do they have solutions against all types of defensive coverages? And it won't, like, crunch time offense, 5 minutes a game, super small sample size by definition. But do they have the cohesion? Do they have the answers? Do they know what they want to get to? Does Kristaps fit in that? Can they utilize him without sacrificing parts of what make Tatum, Brown, and Holiday great? All that stuff. And then on top of it, like, how different actually is Mazzulla? Like, it's cool to be different now in preseason. What happens in the middle of the season? Can he, you know, make those changes quicker rather than needing a full off season to get to the place where he should have been at last year?
If that makes sense. It gets to like it's like, how dominant do they want to be? And you talk about like consistency, like this is just the NBA. Like, obviously they're going to get up 20 sometimes. And then like the other team, you know, is just going to make threes and come back. But it's like, what is the Celtics, this current Celtics ability to kind of like take over a game, whether it's responding to a run by the other team, whether it's just like finishing out quarters and halves, or it like comes down to that kind of clutch offense, is like, what is the makeup of the team when like it's just gut punch time, gut check time? I guess you would check your own gut and punch the other people's guts. But like, can they kind of flip the switch and just be like, oh, this is our game now? Like, yeah, we're going to take over. Because I think, as you mentioned, Jay, like that team last year was very good, but it was so reliant on making three pointers. And I think it comes back to the kind of general theme we're talking about. But it's like, all right, do they have the capability of like three pointers are not falling, but they need to win the next 3 minutes. And are they going to be able to be a team that can like figure out the way to do it, whether that's just like really locking in defensively or throwing that curveball on offense? But I think that's the kind of what I'm looking for, is like, basketball, as they say, is a game of runs. But how do they respond when they kind of need to have that moment? Because I don't think the Celtics were very good last year in terms of like having those great kind of games or winning super ugly. It's like they relied on like a lot of three pointing and the shot making and this kind of their natural talent, but there wasn't that like just crazy, just like taking over games and winning ugly and winning games they probably shouldn't have won. And I'm saying that now, but that could have been true. They won 57 games last year. That's a lot of wins. But I guess that's kind of what I'm looking for, is just like, what happens when they get punched in the face? How do they respond? And that's where they can kind of develop and see if they have the consistency.
For sure. It's like, I mean, they came out 21-5 out of the gate, but then it felt like they weren't really building anything for the rest of the year, to both of your guys' points. It's like it was up and downs. It was not real, real consistency. And that kind of came through in the playoffs, where they showed their true colors on that front. So it's like, I mean, think about it. Like, even for as bad as Game 7 was, they should have lost that game in Game 6 against the Heat. Like, and they would have lost that game, like, collapsing, like, giving up a double-digit lead in the last, like, 6 minutes of that game, where the offense just completely fell apart. And that just happened time and time again. For as good as they were that season, that's, like, probably what I'll remember that team the most for in those moments. And now it's, like, you have a couple new faces in the mix, like Porzingis. Jrue Holiday is obviously playoff proven, but his numbers are kind of up and down that front. Porzingis, we don't really haven't seen much of him. So it's like, what do those guys add to that equation in those moments is really what's going to, you know, clearly make or break the identity of this team to a degree.
And I thought, for whatever reason, it just took them a long time to respond last year. And I don't, like, there's something about a team that can like have one bad quarter and then look at each other and be like, let's fucking get this right, guys. Let's do it right now. And, you know, if you lose three games in a row in the regular season, there are a lot of teams that have done that and won a title. The Nuggets last year in like March or April were pathetic. They were giving up millions of points. Jokic was having like low light highlight, low light reels where on Twitter he was just like giving up bucket after bucket and it didn't matter. But it did feel like last year the Celtics were just, it took them long to respond. They lost like three games in a row a number of times. They gave up a 28 point lead and then the next game gave up like a 14 point lead with 5 minutes left because they could not keep Lamar Stevens off the glass. Like, you just need, and then it carried over into the playoffs. Like, things went bad against James Harden and they couldn't on the fly just take away his comfort level. Things went bad against the Heat and then all of a sudden they're down 3-0 and need to win 4 straight games and can't quite do it. So it's like the identity of the team to just keep doing, making the simple play, the right play, no matter what. That's what's held the Celtics back. Can they get that?
We shall see. And we will be here every single day, Monday through Friday, to talk about it, whether or not they do it or whether or not they fail to do so. But we'll be here Monday through Friday. And so this has been the free episode of this week. If you want to come back tomorrow and hear this podcast, go to patreon.com/stillpotable. Become a kid. If you want to hear us again on Wednesday, come back and become a god. If you want to be here and just tell us we're stupid and join us here live on the podcast, come back and become a legend. We would welcome that as well. It's going to be very exciting to start the season, and we will be here for you every day, Monday through Friday. No matter what, we are still potable. I still have not figured out a way to end this podcast. And so I'm just going to keep talking.
See, this is your new bit. This is how you've decided to end the podcast, is by saying that you haven't figured out a way to end the podcast. I see through your tricks.
Thank you for explaining the jokes to the listeners, Jay. That seems to be your new bit.
And that's why I take you out of your rhythm. And that's why I ruined it for you.
Well, thanks, folks. See you tomorrow on Patreon.
I just forced a turnover.
I'm proving crunch time.
Oh, dude, my crunch time lineup is terrible. I have bad stats. I am like the Celtics of yesteryear.
Oh, we didn't tell the people about how you tore your hammy in a softball game.
I did not tear my hammy. I pulled my hammy.
Did you pull yourself out of the game?
No, I stayed in the rest of the game, and then
I can respect you then.
Then we had a two-hour break, and I tried to play the next game. I was leadoff hitter. I took one swing, and it just made it feel so bad, and then I pulled myself out of the game. And then we lost the tournament.
And we are still potable.